There is no sense at all in which it's theft. The Russian assets remain in this institution. They've been impounded. The investments that Russia had have matured. So Russia's funds are sitting in cash, but they're generating income for the institution, which Russia has no claim on. So there's no legal issue here.
Episode 15, and Yellen is telling a story right there. We'll get into that. It's really a shabby situation for the entire macro environment this week. U.S. national debt is projected to reach $50 trillion by 2034, and that's assuming there's no recession or black swan or wars. It's really something. I'll have some incredible links in the show notes for you this week. But likely, somewhere by 2034, we should see something like $60 or $70 trillion. In U.S. debt. We're already at $35 trillion right now. So what is the likelihood that we'll be at 60 or 70? It's almost a lock, if not a lot more. Their projections, and this is coming from the Congressional Budget Office, also assume that we won't take on a bunch of debt. So some years, you know, yeah, some years it might be $2 trillion, some years it might be $3 trillion, some years it might be $4 trillion, but it'll all average out, right? And of course, we can't cut spending. Oh no, that's much too hard. Here's Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen once again.
It's difficult to cut costs. Discretionary spending, which is what's right. governed by appropriations, it has fallen relative to the size of GDP. And if once you involved in looking what's in there, more than half of it is defense.
So what she's saying there, very poorly, I might add, is that a lot of what we're spending money on is must-spend items right now. There's not a lot to cut. There's not a lot of, quote, what they call discretionary spending. We've kind of whittled it down. We've kind of gotten rid of all the stuff that we can, like, opt to spend, and we're left with stuff we have to spend, and it's all a really big number. That's what she's saying.
It's difficult to cut costs. Discretionary spending, which is what's right. governed by appropriations, it has fallen relative to the size of GDP. And if once you involved in looking what's in there, more than half of it is defense. It's really not possible to get cuts there. And a growing source of expenditure is for retirement programs, Social Security, and Medicare.
So this is a tough spot, right? Because we got to continue to be the world's empire. We got bases everywhere. It's kind of the way the whole system is backed up, is by the might of the U.S. military. So got to keep spending there. You know what? Got to keep those resource wars going too. And also, there's all these dang old people that we have been taking money out of every single paycheck for their entire lives. And now they expect to get paid. So we got to pay them. So what are we going to do? Because we're the world's empire and we've been taking money, Social Security, out of all these people's paychecks. Still are. And they expect to get something for it. So we're kind of in like a rock and a hard place, she's saying.
There, and a growing source of expenditure is for retirement programs, Social Security, and Medicare. And, you know, I think it's right, especially the Job Cuts and Tax Act, provisions of which will expire at the end of next year, really resulted in a substantial loss in revenue.
So we're going to have some job cut taxes, whatever she said, but we're going to have taxes expired next year. In other words, taxes will go up.
And so undoing some of that and asking the wealthiest and highest income Americans to pay their fair share.
Yeah, their fair share. In other words, you're going to have a higher tax bracket. You're going to have to pay more. And that also generally means corporations. Where they get kind of tricky with the language here is an LLC for a small business that makes more than $400,000 a year is considered somebody who's not paying their fair share, somebody who's, you know, doing well off. However, I can tell you, as somebody who owns a small business, if you're only making $400,000 a year and you have expenses, you're not making very much money overall. You're not taking home a lot of money. So you're not actually that wealthy, but you're going to get taxed like you are. And they use language to confuse you because they hate you and they want to manipulate you. And so they say these words that make it sound like, well, they're going to be taxing Bill Gates and Elon Musk. but not you, who owns a little LLC. I just pointing that out.
In revenue. And so undoing some of that and asking the wealthiest and highest income Americans to pay their fair share and, you know, raising corporate taxes somewhat, not back to previous levels, is part of a what I think is a reasonable plan.
I think what gets me fired up is they have all of these ludicrous policies that I don't agree with, and they have all of this degen behavior when it comes to spending that I don't agree with. And then their solution is raise taxes. But you can't raise your taxes enough. Like, there's just not enough taxes to raise. First of all, the government primarily makes its tax revenue off capital gains taxes, and if the economy slips, that goes down. If the S&P slips, that goes down. But just recently, the interest payments on the U.S. debt surpassed what we spend on the military. And we're famous for our ludicrous military spending. And all of this impacts every individual around the world because the U.S. is the reserve currency. And I think this situation is one of many reasons why, like a recent study by the University of Michigan said that headline sentiment index has fallen to its lowest since last November, which is 65.6. In other words, Wall Street's loving what's going on right now, but the people, they're not, right? The Cantillon effect is in full force here. The people closest to the money are benefiting the best. There are multiple economies happening right now. And the people at the top that don't get affected by grocery prices and energy prices are doing really well, historically well. Go look at the numbers. You'd be shocked that so many Americans are doing so well right now. You wouldn't think it, at least if you're sitting where I'm sitting. Wall Street's loving it. The American people are not right now. And housing defaults just hit their highest since 2011. Credit card defaults for small lenders have hit record levels right now. That's surpassing dot-com bubble and the financial crisis peaks. Bigger than 2008, bigger than 2000. And we've just lived through 38 straight months of inflation above 3%. You see, Bitcoin fixes all of this. It's the most practical solution for a consumer, an investor, or a corporation that's seeking protection over the long term. Because the market has been fully distorted by these policies that get me so worked up. We've had 16 years of money printing and low rates. And that's completely distorted the market. It's put so much money into the system that our brains can't comprehend it. That's why we saw all these ludicrous things around NFTs and now all these meme coins. That's just the edges of the money. That's just the cheap money. That's not even the big money. That just shows you how degenerate it's gotten. And when rates went up and monetary policy got tight, all this money that's been created in the last 16 years at astronomical levels, it needed somewhere to go. They need to fight inflation. They want to protect themselves from inflation, just like we do. They also want to earn a return because they don't actually do anything productive. This is how they make money. They want to outpace the rest of us. They want to use their financial privilege to outpace the rest of us. This big money, so much money we can't even comprehend. And since the dot-com boom, tech has been the big moneymaker for Wall Street and the U.S. You put a few million in, you take a few billion out. In 2003, there were around 748 billionaires in the United States. That's an increase from the previous year at 704. In the last few years, when it's been getting harder and harder for people in the States, these sons of bitches have been getting richer and multiplying in size. In 1990, there were 66 billionaires. Today, by the measures that I can find in 2023, was the last time it was checked, 748 billionaires. Why? Dot-com boom. Then COVID came, and things were different for a little bit. And right after COVID, at the peak of the return-to-office craze, it looked like big tech was finally slowing down, was no longer going to be the driver of all of the money in the economy. They were going to become just another mature industry. This is just a couple of years ago, guys. This is just a couple of years ago. The narrative from Wall Street and the financial press is that tech was turning into another manufacturing industry, like automobiles, like machinery, like concrete. Hopefully some good revenue there, but no longer driving the entire market, no longer holding up the entire market. And we did see big tech companies engage in these massive layoffs. They were signaling to Wall Street, we're value-oriented now. You'll recall it was layoff after layoff.
150,000 tech workers have been laid off in 2022 alone.
Amazon today announcing it's going to cut 18,000 workers.
We're going to see more. It's going to continue to weave through the public and private market.
And just as it looked like it was a bloodbath for tech, this little company named OpenAI comes onto the scene, and they announce ChatGPT. And the moment they announced ChatGPT, the big money realized their salvation was here.
Record highs, record closes for the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ as NVIDIA hits a record of its own.
Another day, another record for NVIDIA.
If you look at when ChatGPT was first announced, that was the fall of 2022. So it's a really, really fast rise in a very short amount of time.
Apple took 1,793 days, or less than 5 years, to go from a $1 trillion company to a $3 trillion company. NVIDIA says, hold my beer. They did the same thing, $1 to $3 trillion, in less than a year.
NVIDIA is now worth more than the entire stock market in France or the UK. One company. Why? Well, the tech companies, the banks, the investors, the politicians, you should go look up how much Nancy Pelosi alone has made off of NVIDIA stock options. All of their incentives aligned, right? Even the feds. Everybody's aligned. They needed this pump. And this bubble has created a giant artificial liquidity black hole.
When ChatGPT came out, NVIDIA was worth less than $1 trillion. Then 6 months, 7 months after ChatGPT, in May of 2023, it hit $1 trillion. And at the time, people were starting to realize that if AI was a gold rush, NVIDIA was the one making the shovels. The NVIDIA craze just never stopped. It hit $2 trillion in February of this year. 6-8 months later, its value has already doubled. And then from $2 trillion, it only took just over 3 months for it to hit $3 trillion.
Yeah, I always say Bitcoin is the greatest liquidity black hole there is. And I do believe that on the long term. Because there are headwinds against NVIDIA already developing right now, like AMD, Intel, and others that are making competitive chips. And they'll come in at competitive prices. For the first half of 2024 so far, the AI bubble is like this spatial anomaly unlike anything we've ever seen before. It's life, Jim, but not as we know it. And it's sucking in liquidity at a greater rate than even Bitcoin can. And that's why we see for the last 3 weeks or so this kind of crab walk, or longer really, this sort of crab walk on the price slowly going down. NVIDIA is the stock market right now. They are the entire S&P 500, essentially. This is extremely centralized. If you think about the value, the S&P 500 is supposed to be 500 companies. And they talk about the Magnificent Seven as if it's seven companies propping it up, but realistically it's developing into the Magnificent One. The S&P 500 is being centralized into one company. When you get that kind of centralization, it's usually a melt-up. Now, those melt-ups can go for a while, so I'm not saying we're about to see everything burst, but I am saying these things do have a clock. And I'm wondering, how long does that last? Is it maybe a greater AI cycle? So I've seen some analysts say what's going to happen, and I'd like to ask, maybe I'll ask you, the audience, tell me. Here's what the analysts say is going to happen next. The AI money will go from NVIDIA into other companies that are now receiving the benefits of AI, the optimizations and efficiencies of AI. I'm skeptical, though. I'd like to know what you think, where this whole AI bubble goes next. Maybe it's not a bubble. What do you think? And how long does it last? Specifically, give me a date of how long you think this lasts. And here's a second question. I know I'm asking you a lot of questions, but please do boost in. Does this AI bubble have to pop for Bitcoin to start climbing again significantly? Boost in and tell me what you think. If Bitcoin can pump without the AI bubble having to pop, and when you think the AI bubble will pop. You know, they say it's based on fundamentals, but these tech companies, they've spent something like north of $60 billion. They're not making a buck off this. Nobody's really making money off this yet. So this thing has a clock. All right, well, coming up just around the corner, your boosts, some very important project updates. If you run a node, you need to keep listening. And there's some fresh summer Bitcoin FUD. And I have the receipts. I'll do some debunking. And then there's great news that came out of Ethereum's central management team this week. I'll tell you about that and more. But first, I want to tell you about my friend over at Podhome.fm. Barry and the team have built something really special. Podhome is my podcasting 2.0 platform of choice. Unlimited shows and episodes powered by unlimited Podhome AI. It'll do your transcripts. It'll help balance your audio. It'll give you chapter suggestions and title and description suggestions. And the UI makes it simple to add value for value music, set up your splits between your guests and your hosts, take advantage of all of the Podcasting 2.0 features like live audio streaming and more. Just use my promo code TWIB. That'll get you 3 months for free on my Podcasting 2.0 hosting platform of choice. Make your podcast more competitive by leveraging the Podcasting 2.0 features. Stand out from the crowd, stand out from the noise, and use the Podhome platform to make it easy to do. It's like you got a team in your back pocket. Podhome.fm, promo code TWIB. And a big thank you to Podhome.fm for sponsoring this week in Bitcoin. I am not only a customer, but I am also a big fan. It's Podhome.fm, promo code TWIB. All right, we got some boosts this week. We sure did. And we got a baller boost right off the top from No Second Best, 82,222 sats.
Hey, Rich Lobster!
No Second Best writes, I love that stupid duck tune. If the ETFs are stacking so much Bitcoin, why hasn't the price been moving? Are they playing paper Bitcoin games? Ah, that's a great question, because I've seen this raised, and you would think, right? We talk about they had 19 straight days of inflows. Why isn't the price moving? They must be doing paper games. I think it's pretty reasonable to get there. However, I think you got to consider the market dynamics. We got to all-time price highs right now. Actually, even where we're at now, we're still just 10%. Off the all-time high. So there are a lot of OG holders that are making profit. I noticed that one of the folks that tracks this noted that whales that have been around for like seven, eight years, sometimes even longer, they're selling a lot right now. Like we've seen 50,000 Bitcoin in the past 10 days, somewhere around $3.3 billion in USD terms worth of Bitcoin sold by accounts that were stacking since 2017. So you're going to have people that take profits. And by the way, this is always going to be a thing in Bitcoin. You see, there's this whole like, oh, it's the greater fool's theory is what Peter Schiff and others say. No, no. Life happens. People need to take profits. They want to buy real estate. They got to pay things off. They want to live a little easier. People will always be taking profits, like the miners are doing right now too. The miners are selling like crazy. We are seeing actual capitulation happening amongst the miners as we sort of digest the halvening. We're 60 days post-halvening right now. 60, 61, depending on when if you're listening to this round of release. There's things that just have to get digested with that. But I did a little look. The Bitcoin ETFs launched on January 11th, 2024. So that's about 160-ish days as I record. Now, if we look at iBit, that's BlackRock's. They've returned over 114%, which vastly outperforms the S&P 500 average return, which is around 22.7% over the same period. And that's one of its most remarkable periods. When we're at the all-time high, the return on these ETFs is like around 60%. It was. It takes the S&P 5 years on average to get those same returns. So in 160 days, the Bitcoin ETFs gave us 5 years worth of S&P performance. Now, that's going to fluctuate, right? But that's incredible. And so if we zoom out and realize not that long ago, we were at 30, and not much longer after that, Peter Zeihan and others were saying we were going to go to zero. And here we are, 10% off an all-time high. And it's just gone sideways for a while, slightly down. I think it's worth keeping in mind, too, that Bitcoin can move 10% in no time, up or down. So for 10% off an all-time high, that's really nothing. It really is nothing. It feels stagnant in a way it has been. This is what happens too. There's a futures market now. There is some buffoonery happening. There's a cash and carry that has a delay, a cash and trade or whatever it's called, has a delay. All of that stuff it's all coming, right? But I will note, if you were to go by the historical trends, I know I'm going on about this, but something I think about. I think about it just from an investment standpoint, and I just like to think about it, even though I just plan to hold. Next year is really, if you go by historical trends, when the bull cycle starts in the four-year cycle. I mean, it's always, who knows, these things are subject to change. Past performance does not indicate future performance, etc. ETFs are involved now. But for the last three cycles, it's been like clockwork. I know this sucks to hear right now, but generally, things pick up after an election, during an election year. And typically, in the halving cycle, it's the next year where Bitcoin really rips. So combine the two things. And you probably think by December, we're probably going to start seeing a Santa Claus rally. And then 2025 is probably a ripper. It doesn't mean we won't see anything happen. Nothing necessarily dictates that cycle will repeat. But historically, that's where we've been at. We're post-halving, 60 days. People are taking profits. The mining industry is digesting the halving change. And then you have this NVIDIA black hole that, you know, we haven't seen anything like this in the previous cycles. And we're during a tightening cycle with interest rates that have been higher than they've ever been since Bitcoin's entire life. And yet here we are holding tight 10% off the top. That ain't bad, man, if you think about it. That is not bad, considering that NVIDIA monster that's growing like crazy right now, that's sucking up entire solar systems, and we're at a monetary tightening with a high rate. The money printer is just barely turning back on. We're likely going to see rates get cut in the U.S. soon. Then you got the election, and then you probably got the NVIDIA bubble to pop. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't. Some people think it'll keep going, but you know, there's just all these things that seem to line up in Bitcoin's favor just a little bit further down the road. So don't give up hope. No second best. That's my analysis. I could be totally wrong. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. Not even J-Pal. User 2049 comes in with 29,609 sats.
I hoard that which your kind covet.
They say, enjoy your time in the woods. Thank you. It's another great episode. This donation is from one of our Thousand Oak user 2049 with that anonymous username. I don't know if I'm putting those two things together. Thousand Oaks meetup attendees. I do have, by the way, oh, I should mention in the show, Spokane, Washington meetup coming. Meetup.com/JupiterBroadcasting. Secretly, I'd love to meet up with more Bitcoiners. We have a Spokane meetup on July 13th. I'm going to be heading out to Bozeman with the family. I'll probably take some time off the air during then, but I will be doing a meetup and would love to meet some Bitcoiners in person, just chat, see how things are going. You know, that's one of my favorite things now when I do these meetups and I somebody goes, by the way, I've been listening for years. I'm a Bitcoiner. And I'm like, really? You know, I just light up. I just love hearing it. We got 15,000 sats from the Podfather.
Coming in hot with the boost. Woo!
Of course, he sent 5,000 sats to our artist that week. Thank you, Podfather. Really appreciate that. And then sent 10,000 sats to just boost for joy.
Boost!
Thank you. Feeling that joy. Boosting is love, Podfather. Oppie1984 comes in with 8,000 sats. Pew, pew, pew! I just wanted to say thanks for recommending River. I've been wanting to get away from Coinbase and haven't had the time to do my research, so I'd been using the Cash App. I signed up for River through your link, and so far I'm loving it. I set up my DCA in no time, and I really appreciate their clean look and focus on Bitcoin only. No Coinbase ship coinery. Happy, happy, joy, joy. Well, thank you, Oppie. I really like River too, and I will put my referral link in the show notes again if I can remember. They're one of those companies that there's like a handful of companies I'd be happy to take sponsorship from in the Bitcoin space, and I think River is one of them. So I'm glad you like them, and that's also who I recommend to my friends and family. Zachilles comes in with Roa Ducks, 2,222 sats. Mining should have been called minting Bitcoin. Minting. Minting's not bad. Yeah. More equivalent to like what the U.S. Treasury might do. They mint a coin. Zachilles, I think you have started a question that I want to put back out there to the audience. What else could we call Bitcoin mining? So I've come up with producing, or somebody did, and it stuck with me. I like minting. I could see that too. What would you call Bitcoin mining? Because I honestly think some of the hysterics around Bitcoin's energy use and environmental impacts just come from the mining analogy. At least that's my suspicion. Jin from Atik comes in with, look at that, it's 3,000 sats.
That's not possible. Nothing can do that.
It is, Scotty. I see it right here. Hi, Chris. Thanks for the shout out for Simplex Chat version 5.8. I was so glad you mentioned it. Like you, I've been using and following the project of SimpleX or Simplex since last year. And now it started. Now I start to tell friends and family if they want to get in touch with me, they need to use it. Lazy people will complain, quote, yet another messaging platform, end quote. But the only true constant in life is change. So Bitcoin self-custody for money and Simplex for messaging are two very good options. Well said. Jin from Matik, I agree. And I feel like RoboSats and other platforms should just get on the Simplex train for messaging. He also sends a link to thebitcoinhole.com, which has a review of Bitcoin hardware wallets. I am still looking for submissions for good Bitcoin hardware wallets. If you would like to boost in and support the show and endorse a hardware wallet, please do. Oh, look at that. Ace Ackerman comes in with a row of ducks and says, value for value, episode 13. Well, thank you, sir. Nice to hear from you. Halleck comes in with 10,000 sats.
Make it so.
You're doing a good job. Oh, I should have read the boost before I played the message. I'm sorry, Halleck. I didn't realize. Halleck says,
you're doing a good job.
That's what he says. Thanks, Halleck. I appreciate that. Grashmaster comes in with road ducks. Thank you for another great episode. I love the tool suggestions and mining news. Oh, I know. I got mining adjacent news for you coming up in just a moment. I'm still looking for my mining correspondent. Another topic, though. Someday we need to get JB back up to the northeast of the U.S. for a meetup or a conference. I think the last time was Red Hat Summit Boston in like there is another one. Yeah, that's a good point. There probably will be. I think they just said the next one's going to be. I don't think the next one's in Denver. I think it's back in Boston or something. Yeah, I don't get to the East Coast very often because I prefer to drive. That's why I have an RV. And I happen to be born on the west of the West Coast. I'm on the I-5 corridor in the Seattle, Washington area. And if you look at it on a map, it basically looks like beachfront property to the Cascades. And I mean, you literally cannot get more west. And so everywhere I go, I have to go very far east. And so that's just, it's just not, what I'm waiting for is like time. I'm waiting for like 3 to 4 or 5 months where I could be on the road, do the shows and travel. But every now and then I do get on an airplane and I probably will fly out there and I'll keep everybody posted if I make it out there next year. Oh, more ducks from the Golden Dragon. While I kind of like that the ETFs bring a whole new folk to Bitcoin, I'm of the opinion that bringing the suits to this was a giant mistake, as evidenced by the fact that they already hold so much. Of course, this is what folks at the top desire, so us plebs can't stack at a decent price, or that price is out mining. By the way, This Week in Bitcoin is the best Bitcoin pod. Hey, thank you. Yeah, I've been asking what you think if too much is too much. And he says he's of the opinion that bringing the suits was a giant mistake. But I ask you this, Golden Dragon, how do you get the number to go up without them? Or is that just fine? User 4604 comes in with 2,000 sats and says, the Bolts Exchange Swap blog post is live, and this is great. I'll try to put a link to this in the show notes. Bolts now lets you swap between all the chains, including now Liquid. I'm trying to remember which way you couldn't go before, but you had to have an intermediary step to get to Liquid, or maybe it was chain to Liquid or Liquid to on-chain. I can't remember. I think it might have been that. And you had to use like swap.io instead. And now Bolts Exchange handles all of it right there in Bolts.exchange. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go to boltz.exchange. It's a super easy way to move funds between Lightning or on-chain, and now between Lightning, on-chain, or Liquid. It's great. Listener Jeff comes in with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sats.
So the combination is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
He writes, I wonder if the ETFs would create a power dynamic like we have now with the Saudis and oil. It's not that we don't have the oil here in the U.S. It's that we don't want to mine it. Not in my backyard. Maybe since these ETFs are American, it would give the U.S. more world economic leverage since the other countries don't want to mine it. But I don't have a good feeling about how much Bitcoin is going into these ETFs. It kind of tarnishes the point of it. How could we get it back out of these ETFs, I wonder? Oh, it'll flow out from time to time. It's been flowing out this week. ETFs definitely have sell periods. You know, I've been thinking about this. And I realized Bitcoin's been here before, my friends. I mean, if you think about it, what was GBTC before the ETFs? It was just a giant trust that was soaking up like a couple of percentage or something, a percent of the Bitcoin supply. And Bitcoin is fine. But then if you go even further back, look at Coinbase, Kraken, and Binance. All the exchanges, they hold lots of Bitcoin. And they do all the transactions locally in a database. You know, if I were on Coinbase and I were to send you 500,000 sats or something, that would never actually leave the Coinbase network. It would all just be within Coinbase's system. And they might finalize it out to one single on-chain transaction at some point in the future. And they hoard the Bitcoin. But it hasn't hurt Bitcoin. It's been fine. And I bet we'll see more of this. We'll see companies like Sailor and others that hoard a bunch of Bitcoin. I mean, Apple could come right in right now and buy up 5% of the supply if they wanted. But it doesn't seem to ever hurt Bitcoin. Eventually that Bitcoin comes out. I wonder, I think more about it. This is a little grim, But I think more about the long-term problem of people dying, the non-institutional Bitcoin. Oh, how about this for a straw man argument? But it's something to think about. The institutional Bitcoin at least is recoverable. But what about when you and I die and our cold wallets die with us? And nobody knows the code. Or whoever you pass it on to dies. That Bitcoin's never coming back. So, like, is the first wave of hodlers going to be responsible for losing, like, half the supply? Possibly. Who knows? What will happen then? I bet you Bitcoin will be just fine. But it is interesting to think about. How much is too much? If this was a proof-of-stake network, like Ethereum, I'd be really worried, you guys. That would be very concerning because the largest holders are the bosses. Now, staking isn't involved yet, but let's give it time. Check back in like 5 years and see if staking hasn't been added. Thank you, everybody who boosted in. I do have the 2,000 sat cutoff just for timing. There's a bunch of other boosts in there that I did read and I have in the doc, and I really appreciate it. We had 17 boosters. We stacked 174,345 sats. This one's, you know, this is good. I'm very, very appreciative and very thankful to everybody who boosted in. So thank you, everyone, extremely. This show is a labor of love for sure. And I'd love to see that get around. For some reason, it feels like 200,000 sats is the mark. I feel like where I've received the value that I've put into it. I'm sure that's probably still a very low number, but overall, what are you going to do? It's just what it is. And I would love to see that get up to around there. We got so close this week. So if you've been wanting to boost in and support the show and keep it going, if you think a high signal Bitcoin podcast that's totally independent, that's working for the podcasting 2.0 standards and is audience focused is an important thing, then please do consider supporting and boosting in. And thank you everybody who does, especially those of you who do it routinely. You have no idea how much it means to me. It is really one of the biggest, highest signals I get back from this show. You know, been doing this for a very long time now. The metrics, they matter in like, hey, when is an ideal time to release this episode? How does that do? That's what I look at the download numbers for. But the number that really matters is how are we doing on the boost? How are we doing there? Because to me, that is the bottom line value for value transaction. And that's the highest signal. And I actually think, having done this for a long time, that's an extremely healthy way to look at this. Because all the other stats can lie to you. But nothing like the boost tell you the real signal. Nothing does. So thank you, everybody. I appreciate all 17 of you, and I sincerely mean that. Well, the SEC has informed the Ethereum Central Management Team over ConsenSys that they're not going to get sued for being a security. The irony, I hope, is not lost on you, that there is a central group that the SEC can inform to tell them that there's not going to be a securities investigation. ConsenSys' founder is Joe Lubin. He's the co-founder of Ethereum, along with Vitalik. And I think also Charles was in there. They write, "Today we're happy to announce a major win for Ethereum developers." Oh, yeah. "The enforcement division of the SEC has notified us that it is closing its investigation into Ethereum 2.0. Now, Ethereum 2.0, of course, is the proof-of-stake Ethereum, which Gary Gensler rightly assessed as a security. They go on to say this means that the SEC will not be bringing charges alleging that sales of ETH are securities transactions. Of course, the person that wrote this probably participated in Ethereum pre-mine, so again, the irony should not be lost on you. They continue to write, "The decision follows a letter we sent on June 7th asking if the SEC could confirm that the May ETH ETF approvals, which were premised on ETH being a commodity, meant that the agency would close its Ethereum 2.0 investigation. This seems to be a response to that." In other words, when the ETF was approved, this decision was essentially made. So the White House decided if Ethereum is a security or a commodity. They also say, "In our lawsuit, we also seek a declaration that the offering of user interface software like MetaMask and swaps and staking does not violate the securities law." So they're not completely done yet with the SEC. I think it's a little unfortunate to see this. I think it's pretty obvious that Ethereum was a security. It had a pre-mine, and then proof of stake is a centralization system, and you depend on Vitalik and ConsenSys to make Ethereum get better and improve and increase value. And right now, Ethereum's getting its ass kicked by things like Solana and Base, and that's why even though there's rumors, strong rumors, that the ETF approval is just weeks away, the price performance of Ethereum still sucks. It still sucks because it's a bad product. It's a technology platform, and there's better technology out there. And the only way it gets better is if Consensus and Vitalik and team, the central management team, make it better and make it more competitive. So your investment in Ethereum is dependent on that central management team improving Ethereum and making it better, which is a frickin' security. But it's also an election year, so here we are. And the SEC is dropping their lawsuit against Consensus. All right, we've got some summer FUD to get into. Let's bust a little fresh summer FUD, my friends, because Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick from Texas has got everybody all riled up this week. I won't spoil it. This will be in a clip I'm going to play for you. This is the, so let's set this up. This is the big concern right now is it's getting hot, especially in places like Texas. And whenever that happens, it's a great time to be a tough guy. You know what? It's a great time to make political points, be a tough guy, and take names and try to make the consumer think at least that you're doing the right thing. And so energy FUD is going to ramp up this entire summer. And I want to break this down for you and tell you what's really going on and what the actual truth is, which is 180 from what you're about to hear. But I'm going to arm you with this knowledge because this will be something I think you'll likely hear all summer long as Bitcoin has entered politics. And so we're going to need to have go-to counter responses, as always happens.
The people in charge of the state's power grid are expecting peak demand on the grid to effectively double over the next 6 years.
So it's not just more people moving into Texas. Power will also be needed for growing industries, specifically things like crypto mining and AI. Fox 4's Alex Boyer joins us with more.
Yeah. So when they say crypto mining, they mean Bitcoin mining, right? They don't mean Litecoin. They don't mean Monero. Like, those are the only other, as far as I know, proof of work coins. There might be another one. It's Bitcoin. Bitcoin's the only one that's operating at any industry scale. So when they say crypto in this report, they do mean Bitcoin.
Alex. Hey, guys, it's only a matter of time, of course, before we start hitting a streak of triple digit days. In the short term, energy experts say that the power grid is in good shape. But in the long term, there are some big unknowns.
With the hot summer months on the horizon, there's a renewed focus on the state of the power grid.
I think it's incumbent on the PUC to look at existing ways that we could address our reliability concerns and see if we can accomplish our goals using those tools first.
The chair of the Texas Public Utility Commission and CEO of ERCOT testified before the State Senate Business and Commerce Committee Wednesday. Pablo Vegas says explosive growth in the state of Texas will continue to put pressure on the power grid.
That's effectively almost doubling the peak demand of the ERCOT grid in about 6 years.
A big concern, the impact of Bitcoin mining and artificial intelligence data centers with power-hungry computers being built in Texas.
Do we know how many are here or want to come? And what's the load?
So we're talking a magnitude of 10 to 30 times of energy use for an AI data center versus a traditional one. So the impact is really significant.
So you notice when they talk about significant energy impact, and because they're using choice clips from the Senate testimony, which, don't worry, my friends, I went and got the entire testimony and found all of the context for you. We'll be getting to that. But in here, they're cherry picking moments. And when they talk about just disastrous energy use, he's talking about AI. He's not talking about Bitcoin mining because Bitcoin mining can participate in the response demand programs, which we've covered before on the show. Don't worry, we'll cover it more, but I just want to point out how they're cherry-picking these clips.
To come, and what's the load?
So we're talking a magnitude of 10 to 30 times of energy use for an AI data center versus a traditional one. So the impact is really significant. And how many are coming? That's still TBD.
We've seen a lot of numbers come out lately and showing, much higher levels of growth than we've seen in the past.
That being said, Dr. Joshua Rhodes says consumers should feel confident in the reliability of the power grid as we encounter triple-digit days this summer.
I think we have a lot of new generation on the market. We've built a lot of wind, we've built a lot of solar, but also a lot of energy storage that allows us to move some of that energy around.
Now, why is that? Why is that? Why have they all of a sudden, after just a few years ago having such poor infrastructure that they're doing rolling blackouts during the peak of winter, to now 4 or 5 years later, they have plenty of demand. They have plenty of equipment. They've rolled out more renewables. They've rolled out more storage. Why is that? because the Bitcoin companies have been participating in the demand response program, making it profitable for them to invest in infrastructure and monetize that new infrastructure when they build it out. And then the Bitcoin mining companies give that energy back when the grid needs it. So they can afford to build out additional surplus capacity, monetize that capacity when the grid isn't at high demand, let the Bitcoin mining companies use it and pay for it. And then when it gets to triple digits and everybody flips their ACs on, the Bitcoin miners spin down. That additional capacity they've invested in is now available to the general grid. That's why they've made all of those investments. That's why they have all of this new supply.
How many are coming? That's still TBD.
We've seen a lot of numbers come out lately and showing, you know, much higher levels of growth than we've seen in the past.
That being said, Dr. Joshua Rhodes says consumers should feel confident in the reliability of the power grid as we encounter triple-digit days this summer.
I think we have a lot of new generation on the market. We've built a lot of wind, we've built a lot of solar, but also a lot of energy storage that allows us to move some of that energy around.
Plus, more electrical providers are offering financial incentives for folks to install smart thermostats, allowing those same providers to adjust your thermostats remotely on high demand days.
I have one of these installed in my house, and the utility called on it, I think, about 15 times last summer, but I was only home for one or two of them.
Would you do this? Or do you do this? Boost in and let me know if you'd participate in this program where they put a Nest thermostat and then they signal to your Nest thermostat to turn the temperature up on you. Is this a practical use of internet-connected devices? Boostin, let me know what you think.
And in response to the meeting today, this afternoon, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick posted on X that AI and Bitcoin mining produce very few jobs compared to the incredible demand he says that it will put on the grid. He says that Texans will ultimately pay the price and added that he's more interested in building the grid to service customers in their homes, apartments, and normal businesses and keep the costs down as much as possible.
This is so great. So normal businesses, so now he's picking and choosing what is normal and okay businesses. He also says he'd rather invest it in for rural and in homes and things like that. Well, where do you get the money to finance that and to make that viable, you idiot? And then he says that it doesn't produce as much jobs relative to the energy it takes. Of course, having no point of reference like the steel industry or the concrete industry, which take enormous amounts of energy. But also, if you were to ask the locals in these Texas towns, which have been crushed since 2008, Lieutenant, you would discover that the number one thing the Texas towns say is that it's a source of good, clean jobs in good, clean data centers. It's putting these towns back to work. It's all out there. But the truth is, 180 degrees in the different direction of this news clip, large loads like Bitcoin mining can actually help stabilize ERCOT's grid or any grid. And it's not just me saying that. It's the CEO of ERCOT in the Senate testimony saying that.
So ERCOT's job is to balance generation and load. And we can use load to balance that, to provide that balance just as easy as we can use generation. And so there are loads that will tell us we'll back off 50 megawatts at this price and 50 more megawatts at this price. And our dispatch engine will line the loads and the generators up side by side and balance according to who's the next cheapest megawatt. And we don't care if it's a load or a generator. All we care about is maintaining that balance. So controllable load resources are a way that loads can participate in very reliable way for loads to participate in the ERCOT market, and the ERCOT systems, the energy management system, can actually control the ramp rates, control how much comes on, how much goes off. And for a load, it's very useful for a load because they can tell us what their price points are. So we don't dictate to the load what the price point is. They tell us what the price point is based on what they bid in. And then our energy management system can balance both loads and generation that way. So that's a very useful way of loads participating in a real reliable method.
It makes the grid more reliable. So there's that. And then not only does it help make the grid more reliable, it's not really a very large percentage of the grid, despite what that news report would have you believe. They'd have you believe that it's squeezing out homes and people that want to move into Texas. But if you look at how ERCOT classifies Bitcoin mining, they classify it as what's called an ancillary service load. And this ancillary service load is a tiny percent of the overall Texas grid.
So ancillary services. So ancillary services represent about 7% of the overall money spent in the electric market. And crypto is about 4% of that 7%. And they participate in three different kinds of ancillary services. So 4% of the 7% of the total market.
So we're talking about 4% of 7% of their ancillary load is Bitcoin mining. And they don't want to ban Bitcoin mining. They want Bitcoin miners to join up with this program. The news would have you believe that they're like this menace, or the lieutenant governor would have you believe that they're this horrible menace that is going to take away power from homes.
And so to your question on legislation to require to either put a moratorium on crypto mining, what would be more helpful for ERCOT is to have more visibility to what these large loads are doing. And so a good place to start could be making sure we can track and even potentially control the loads of cryptos, because cryptos are a unique business. Their use of energy is tied directly to the cost of electricity and the cost of Bitcoin. And so when either of those fluctuate, they either turn on or turn off based on whether they will make money mining. And so it would be very easy for them to be controlled by ERCOT, because we could take their parameters. They could tell us when they want to run at what energy costs, and we could then ramp them up and down based on the price and scarcity of electricity that's available. That would be a much safer way to work closely with crypto mining from a grid operator point of view.
So they don't want it banned. In fact, they need it because it's helping monetize grid investment. What they want is this demand response program cooperation, what they call the CLR. And I don't know much about it, but what I do understand is that this system works by ERCOT sending these base points to the load operators, like the miner. And it would tell them that they need to ramp up or down and meet this certain megawatt target. And the base points are the result of an order book clearing mechanism that goes every 5 minutes by ERCOT. And normally, it's only generators that participate. So Bitcoin mining would become like, would participate like the generators do, but on the other side of this. Currently, Bitcoin miners outside the CLR have complete discretion over when they want to ramp up or down. And they do tend to ramp up or down based on how much energy costs them. So as ERCOT increases the prices dynamically, they ramp down, because otherwise they're not making money. So there is an economic incentive for Bitcoin miners to just automatically participate. ERCOT wants all of them to. Not all the miners probably do want to participate. What ERCOT wants all of them to do is join in this program. There's a qualifying process to prove that you can follow their base points program. But currently, it sounds like there's some court cases that might be preventing adoption and some patent issues as well. And I'm not sure every Bitcoin mining operation would want to, but I suspect, my guess is, my speculation is, Bitcoin miners would be willing to participate in a CLR program if it meant they got reasonable rates and it got these Congress critters off their backs for energy usage. Right? And the reality is the Texas grid is more reliable since these Bitcoin miners have begun participating, but only a tiny fraction of the Bitcoin mining operations in Texas are actually participating. There's something north of 2,000 Bitcoin mining operations in Texas now. And it's only a couple of hundred of those mining operations that are participating in the program right now. They're not going to let that stand. That's going to have to change. And this is why Oklahoma just did the right thing. If this was so bad, if this was so devastating, Oklahoma wouldn't have done this. So this really is the other signal here. Oklahoma's governor just signed a bill into law that exempts Bitcoin miners from sales tax on electricity bills. Right? They're trying to incentivize the mining business to come in here because they know it's a good, solid, reliable business. I'll have a link to that in the show notes. And speaking of power FUD, the go-to reference, the Cambridge study on Bitcoin's power usage, the one I've had to cite too because we've had really no better source, has just admitted this week that they've probably been overestimating Bitcoin's energy usage by 25% this entire time. They note now that, quote, our estimates do not account for activities that could reasonably be expected to reduce emissions, such as off-grid mining. I saw it compared online. The exclusion of off-grid mining is analogous to taking an election poll without polling rural voters. We estimate, don't know for sure, but the numbers seem to be getting stronger and the data seems to be getting stronger to support this. 30% of all Bitcoin mining right now is off-grid. 75% of that uses sustainable energy. I'll have sources in the show notes. 75%, I think, of all Bitcoin mining, maybe. I know it's getting high. 60%, I think, of all 75. I don't know what the numbers are at the moment, but I have the links in the show notes. It's bonkers how much they've invested in renewables and off-grid and methane capture, and it makes a notable overall impact in Bitcoin's total energy use picture. And Cambridge has not been capturing that, and they admitted that recently. It's huge. And it may be more than 25% if you look at the links in the show notes. So I think that's good news. I think it's good to see Cambridge come out, try to get that right. I don't know why all of a sudden they've been motivated to update it, because I kid you not, people have been pointing this out to them for nearly 3 years. So they just decided to pay attention now, I guess. All right, I got to get you out of here. This has taken too long, but there's a lot to cover. There's some known vulnerabilities in Bitcoin Core 24. If you're running Bitcoin 24, you need to upgrade right away, ASAP. And this week, Bitcoin Core 27.1 came out. It has not only the security fixes that you need, but it also has some nice bug fixes and performance improvements. So it's a good one to go to. But version 24 and below have a known security vulnerability that may be out in the wild now. Also, if you run a Lightning node on LND, versions prior to 0.17 are vulnerable to an LND onion bomb denial of service attack, which is unfortunately easy and essentially low cost to execute. Malicious onion packets cause the node to instantly run out of memory and crash. The attack is, quote, cheap and easy to carry out and will keep the victim offline as long as it lasts. So it seems this was found by Matt Morehouse, who is a Lightning Network security researcher and also a receiver of some OpenSats grants. So that's pretty great to see. And he discovered this, and the patch is in 0.17. So you need to update to LND 0.17.0 or later, because now that this is out there and it's so simple to do, probably something you should be aware of. Speaking of Lightning nodes, I also want to give a shout out to BitBanana. I'll have a link in the show notes. They have a brand new update to their Lightning node management app for Android. This is really only applicable to those of you who have a Lightning node or an app that lets you connect with like an LND URL. BitBanana is a native Android app for node operators, and they say they focus on user experience and ease of use. It's not a wallet on its own, but BitBanana works like a remote control and a remote wallet for your node. So I've done this with Zeus, you can do this with a few other apps, but BitBanana's got a nice clean UI. You can get essentially a wallet-like experience and spend the sats that are on your Lightning node. All right, and our final clip of the week. I'm surprised this hasn't gotten more attention. It seems kind of like a big deal to me. I have what's kind of like a highlight clip, so I apologize. It's not the best clip, but the story's worth it. It's from BTC Prague, which just wrapped up a little bit ago. And this is a T-Mobile rep up on stage.
True story. I was interviewed for Deutsche Telekom in July 2022. They said, okay, you know, you're taking over the Web3 infrastructure team. You're not allowed to use that word Bitcoin in this interview if you want to get hired. Since 2023, as Joe already said, we are running a Bitcoin node, and we are running Bitcoin Lightning nodes as well. And with a chest full of fucking pride, I'd like to let you in a little secret. We will engage in digital monetary photosynthesis soon. Thank you very much.
Dirk, come back. Come back. Come back. What does that mean in layman's terms? What is Deutsche Telekom, T-Mobile? What are you doing? What is that last phrase one more time?
Digital monetary photosynthesis.
So is T-Mobile mining Bitcoin?
We will.
You will. Okay. That is phenomenal.
I mean, they said it in a funny way, but it is pretty great. And they also said during the conference that the company has been running a Bitcoin node and Lightning node since 2023. So I hope they update to LND 0.17 at least. But how about that? That is surprising news. They're going to do it with some sort of solar initiative, I guess, because they called it solar digital photosynthesis or something. I don't know what they called it. It's a pretty funny name. If you made it this far, I want to thank you. You can get links to what I talked about today at thisweekinbitcoin.show. This is episode 15. I'd love to see you boost in and support the show and chat a little bit with me about some of the things we talked about today, and maybe share this show with a friend. who's either Bitcoin curious or maybe make a clip of the energy segment, something to help spread the word about the show. That's a great way to contribute some value back. And last but not least, I'm going to leave you with a value for value track. This is a great song, and you can boost during the song and send the sats to the artist directly, which is a great way to support independent music. Thank you so much for joining me on episode 15. I'm back from the woods, and it was a big one. I guess that's what we should expect, right? And I'll see you back here next episode. I'll leave you with Runnin' by Charlie T.